Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by Witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in today. I'm Michael Greywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate of the Unnamed Path.
And this is Matthew Sidney, writer, musician, and eternal student of life and spirit and the cosmos in general.
And you are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. On this podcast, we discuss teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors of men who love men and laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. We're glad you've decided to join us, and we hope you'll be part of the show, either by calling in at area code 347-308-8222. Yeah, I think I said enough twos. Or you can hang out in the chat room if I can get it up and running. Or you can drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at walking_theUP, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. How have you been, Matthew?
I've been doing really well. I'm very blessed. I've been very busy, you know, working hard and trying to keep up on projects and adulting, and very proud of myself. I was able to change my taillight and my turn signal myself. And so, yeah, life's been good. I'm grateful.
Awesome. That I could not do that. I can't mess with anything with the cars beyond me.
Well, they certainly can be intimidating.
Yeah. This cat, oh my gosh, is going to drive me nuts.
Uh-oh.
For those who are listening, my brother's kitten, I have no idea how old she is just kind of, she loves my feet for some reason. She's constantly attacking my feet. So if I happen to let out a pained noise at some point, it's because she got her claws into me. And I'm trying very hard not to punt her across the room. But anyway. But, you know, other than that, you know, I've been doing pretty good. I am working a lot. I'm actually getting ready for a whole bunch of stuff that's going to be coming up in this later part of the year. Including going to Between the Worlds in September, which I'm going to be doing a workshop. Well, I submitted to do a workshop. Hopefully they accept it. Usually they accept us for everything, so I'm excited about that. And
what's the topic of your workshop?
It's going to be one I've done before at Pagan Spirit Gathering. It's basically an introduction to the Unnamed Path. So I've got to get out my stuff and make sure it's all up to date. And yeah, I'm excited about it. I've had some people like, ooh, you know, they want to, you know, I've had some people say they want to come and attend. So I'm like, awesome. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's great.
And then in October, I'm going back to Illinois for a week for my boyfriend's wedding. So I'm excited about that. And I'm actually going to be they are doing two ceremonies. There's going to be one with the family, which is the official wedding, you know, the whole legal part. But then there's going to be a hand fasting, which is more going to be more pagan-esque. And they actually asked me to perform the hand fasting. So I'm very excited about that. So I have to get stuff ready for that, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's coming up so fast. Because I looked at the calendar, there's basically 1 week left to July, and then next week is August. So it is going by so fast.
It is coming fast.
Yeah. But, you know, it's good, you know, just take time and just commune with yourself, with, you know, your spirit, with nature. And speaking of which, we are going to be talking about communing with some spirits today. We are going to be continuing our discussion. I don't think we should ever say we're going to be wrapping up a discussion, because we're never going to finish, you know, delving into everything that we are learning in the Unnamed Path. Constantly going to be evolving. So today we're continuing our series on working with spirit guides and doing a review of some of the original Unnamed Path podcast episodes. You know, we didn't necessarily have to cut it short, but we cut off in the middle of our discussion last week, well, 2 weeks ago, because we just had so much to talk about with spirit guides and totem animals. And, you know, when I was looking at the files for the three podcasts that we're reviewing, that one was actually the largest one. Like, that one, I think, was close to an hour, and the others were shorter. So it makes sense that we spent an hour talking about it.
Yeah, well, there's so much to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many different perspectives and so many different traditions around this kind of work too. You wish there was enough time to give due honor to all of them. But it was fascinating. So now I'm curious. I understand you've been continuing some of your work with your spirits.
Mm-hmm. I have indeed. So, you know, if you were listening to our that was the cat. If you remember from our last episode, I talked about how I had encountered. You know, we had talked about spirits that are with us from birth, or spirits that, you know, are with us for a season or for a particular project. And I was talking about how I have, my gosh, I'm going, I was talking about how, sorry, the cat just made my brain skip a beat. I was talking about how I had some interactions with the spirit who I've known since birth, but they had always kind of been like in the background, just kind of waiting for me to come to them. And so for the starting with the new moon, that was about a week ago, a little more of a week ago, more or less, I went out to my backyard and I, you know, did a little ritual and shared the first of many red meals with him to get to know him a little bit more. And yeah, he didn't give me his name, but he gave me a lot of information on that he is someone from a past life of mine. And he gave me a whole bunch of, the first couple of times that I met with him, it was just a whole bunch of information on that past life, you know, interacting with him, and how some of what I did in that past life has bled over to my current incarnation. And going beyond that, he's helping me figure out how to get a lot of stuff that I have just kind of all over the place back in line, going back towards where I want to go with my practice, with the show, with just my life in general. So. Wow.
So now do you feel that you've come away from that with more clarity as to your options and your path and your goals?
Yes, I do. He very much, he asked me questions as I was asking him questions as well. Basically, like, why are you wanting to do this? Why, what is your purpose behind doing this? And I had to reevaluate a couple of things that I do on a daily basis. Like, I'm very into social justice work.
Mm-hmm.
And, this conversation came up because of something that was going on online. Like, it had to deal with with someone from the pagan community who is a notorious trans exclusionary radical feminist, and it into my session with my spirit, with all the feelings I was having about this person, about this whole situation, about everyone who is a trans, is a TERF. And, he basically kind of talked me down and talked me through my feelings and helped me process them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I'm trying to think, I'm flipping through trying to look through my notes real quick because I have them. Each time I met with him afterwards, I would sit and write down as much as I could remember before, it became harder to remember. And, okay, here we go. He asked me, why do I feel so strong about the whole situation with trans exclusionary radical feminists? And I was like, well, as a cisgendered gay man, if I don't stand up against this, who will? And he's like, well, has anyone asked you to do this? I was like, no. Then why do you feel like you need to do this? And I had to talk, I had to sit and think, well, I know what it's like to be, what's the word I'm looking for? Singled out to be, that person is not, I don't want to say normal, that person is different from us, going along the masculine lines, he's not man enough or something like that. I know that's like to have felt that. And I, at times like that, I wish I had someone who would have spoken up for me, because in general, when I was growing up, I did not speak out against stuff. I was taught, don't say anything, just be quiet, don't make waves, and just get by. And now that I'm older, I know that in order to make change, you have to make waves. Mm-hmm. And, if I'm going to, everything's all getting mixed up in my head. I have two people in my life who I care very much about, who are trans men. And, if someone was telling them, oh, you're not a real man, I would be all up in their face, you don't have any right to tell these people who I love, or just, you know, these people just in general, that they don't measure up to what you think a man is. You cannot tell them what a man is. And TERFs cannot tell someone what a woman is. So, if I keep going on this route, we're going to run out of time to talk about our subject for the day. But, yes, there was a lot of talking about, you know, where I need to be and, you know, why I am standing up for what I stand up for. And, yeah, I've come away from this experience with a lot more clarity to my purpose and resolve to it. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds fascinating, and it sounds impactful, and it sounds like you got a lot of personal insight out of this practice and opening up to this experience. And you performed the Red Meal, which is the topic of episode 25 of Hyperion's series of podcasts. Tell us a little bit more about the Red Meal and what it is.
So the Red Meal is, if you want to think about it in the terms of, you know, I'm trying to think of the right words to say. If you think about it in Christian or, you know, Judeo-Christian terms, it's like communion. You're sharing a meal with the Spirit, but we are not eating the flesh and drinking the blood of a deity or anything like that. We are simply sharing a meal. Kind of like, I don't know why I didn't think about this one before, Dia de los Muertos, where you do a dumb supper, except you actually have food that you're sharing with the Spirit, that you yourself partake of, and then you give some to the Spirit. And the Red Meal, we use it to commune with totems, the deities, the ancestors, the dead, and spirit guides. It is generally a libation of a red liquid, usually wine, but most of the times I have done the Red Meal, we've used some sort of really dark fruit juice, like cocktail juice, because you can use whatever red liquid you want. It's a substitute for a blood sacrifice. And you drink some of the liquid, and then you pour some of the liquid for the spirits into the cauldron. And there is a tearing of bread. Usually you want to use a loaf of bread, dark bread. And you tear it and you eat some of it, and then you tear off a bit and you give it to the spirits in the cauldron. And that's basically it. You share a meal with them and you sit and speak with them. I mean, that's how I've done it.
Yeah.
How about you, Matthew?
Yeah, that's certainly what I've been taught and what I've done. My first exposure to the Red Meal was through Unnamed Path, but I do understand that it comes from, that there is a many multi-generational tradition around this. There are folks from the traditional witchcraft community for whom this is their practice or something similar. It's similar in some ways to the household or even cakes and ale. This particular format I was first introduced to through Unnamed Path. What I think is powerful is the use of color imagery and the whole history around color magic. And color red is representative of blood. Blood is life. It's the life force. And not only that, but it's also our connection to our blood ancestors, ancestors of the blood, and also ultimately our blood relationship with all living things on this planet. So it's a powerful symbolic way of engaging this unity and this intimate familial relationship between us and the spirits of the land, between us and our ancestral spirits, between us and the memory of those who've been and the guardians of the land. So it's a really powerful, I think, connective force fed by very simple, elegant imagery.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the episode, Hyperion goes step by step on how to, the red meal. He says, one of the first things he says is to know exactly what spirit you are sharing the meal with and why you're doing this. And, we raise a great crossroads, to have a focus point, at the center of the crossroads. And we will tread a meal down to, you can either tread a meal down to the underworld. When to tread a meal, you go clockwise, and you can meet with the dead, the ancestors, mighty dead, the dark god, dark goddess, and totems, or you can tread a meal up, going clockwise, and clockwise to meet with spirit guides, the light god, the light goddess. God, please give me strength with this cat, and other upper world beings. I know you're laughing at me, Matthew. It's okay.
I'm trying to stay focused.
I am too.
Treading the mill, Hyperion gives amazing instructions for this kind of work, and he talks about treading the mill as a opening part of the red meal ritual. And let's say if you want to connect with an example he gives is he's done a red meal for someone who's recently departed. A loved one has crossed over, and you may want to share one special moment with them before they move on to their journey in the afterlife. And you could do a red meal. And one way you might do that is tread the mill, and that's a technique of moving in a circle and using that circular ambulation to generate a trance. And in trance, you can travel to other and engage with other dimensions, other worlds, such as the underworld where the departed dwell. And in that case, tread the mill counterclockwise to descend, but to connect with those energies and share that last moment, use that ritual to connect with the loved one and wish them their best before they move on to their next phase. That's one example that he gives. But he gives this amazing detail. When I was listening to the episodes again, I was impressed with his, really with his power as a teacher and to be able to provide so much information.
Yes. It's very interesting to go back and to listen to it and then to think about the times where I have actually performed the red meal with my brothers or by myself. And I've actually done the red meal more with my brothers than I have by myself, excluding this past week. And from what I can remember, the times I've actually done it versus, you know, listening to the podcast and how it's done, it's always just a little bit different. Like, one step is, like, we've done this before we've done that, or we did something early and then did something that was supposed to be done when we first started later. So it's very much, with most of magic in general, it's all up to how you really interpret how you do it. You know, what feels right when you are performing it to get what you need done. What about you, Matthew? Have you noticed that whenever you've done it?
Yeah, for me, every time I've done the Red Meal, it has been slightly different as far as actual, you know, details of as you mentioned, sequence of events or you know, well, one thing with Unnamed Path, there's no liturgy, there's really no, or very few canonized rituals. You know, there's mm-hmm. just, you know, I think really suggestions to, you know, for people to build on this framework that's been provided. So, yeah, it's always been slightly different every time I've done it, whether by myself or with groups of others. I don't know. I was honored one time. Some of the brothers went up. We went and visited Eddie's grave on his birthday, and that was we shared a mm-hmm. red meal, and that was beautiful. It was wonderful, amazing experience. Definitely connected, and you know, some moments like that are very personal.
mm-hmm.
In a good way. You know, I've certainly been blessed to receive a lot of sound advice. One of my favorite places, though, to do the Red Meal is just in nature, in the woods underneath a tree, or on a rock with overlooking a beautiful vista. Experiences like that can be just romantic and magical and transformative in their own way.
Yes, very much agreed. This past week, when I was doing a Red Meal with the Ancestor, the first one, I was very much, you know, I laid everything out. I raised a great crossroads. I treaded a meal and then sat with him under the new moon and just, you know, listened and chatted with him and made the decision right then and there that I would be sharing a red meal with him every day up to today. And each day got progressively less and less with the ceremony and more about just sitting and listening to him, talking with him. I did not do it outside because it is over 100 degrees here in Texas. So the first time was enough.
that is beastly hot. That's amazing though that you've been doing it, I guess, how many days now?
See, I think it was Thursday, which wasn't necessarily the new moon. I think it was the day after the new moon, but it was still during a dark night. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Over, like, I can't math at the moment. It's well over a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, well, it sounds like you're building.
Go ahead, Matthew.
I was just going to say, it sounds like you're building a relationship with this person.
Yes. Yes. It was very much about, like, the whole experience was very much about trying to build a relationship with the spirit who has been with me for my whole life. And like I said, each day I did a little bit less and less of the ceremony part of the red meal. Like, I didn't tread a meal after a certain day, I didn't tread a meal, or I didn't raise the great crossroads. I just sat with him, you know. And then it got to the point where I have, you know, the food that I've given him sitting in my cauldron, and I've just been refreshing it and just sitting and listening. It very much, did you ever see the movie The Apostle?
No.
It's an old movie, and when I say old, I mean like the 90s. God, that's not old. But
well, gee, thanks.
But I cannot remember the name of the actor, but he's a well-known actor. Pretty sure he's still alive. He plays a preacher who is actually on the run from the law because he beat up someone. But there's a section of the movie where he's basically yelling at God. And someone calls his wife and is complaining. She's like, why is he yelling? What's he screaming about? She goes, oh, he's just talking with God. That's how he does it. I mean, she just said that he's just talking with God. You know, that's how they communicate. And it made me think, and that makes me think about when I was actually Christian, my ministers would actually say, you know, just sit and have a conversation with God. Don't, you know, you don't have to, you know, bow your head and, you know, be all quiet. Just, you know, sit and have a conversation with spirit. And that's basically what I ended up doing, just sitting and having a conversation with spirit after so many days of doing the red meal.
Now, do you see yourself, you know, doing, you know, connecting with the spirit more simply and more readily, you know, as your relationship with him continues to progress?
Yes. Like, even today, I wasn't even in my own personal space. I was just sitting in my living room, which I share with my brother. But I was just sitting here, quiet, and just listening and speaking with him. So, yes, you know, the relationship is going to continue to progress even without the whole ceremony of the red meal. But, you know, one of the things that I really loved when I was listening to this episode of the podcast was, I guess I forgot that the red meal was meant to be done so, I mean, basically frequently. Well, in the way I viewed it, listening to him, you know, that it should be done more frequently and, you know, not, what are the words I'm trying to say? Not just for, like, ceremony, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Because, you know, Hyperion was talking about how, you know, when some of the reasons to do a red meal is, you know, to, you know, when a relative or loved one dies, perform a red meal to connect with their spirit one last time before they process into the other world. You know, or, you know, establishing spiritual alliances or nurturing existing ones. which definitely I've done that the last week, or, you know, to give thanks to, you know, for, what's the word I'm looking for the conclusion of a spiritual alliance with an ancestor or with a spirit guide, or even to just commune with the spirits of the land, you know. And I keep thinking, I'm like, why haven't I done this yet with the genus loci where I am? Why haven't I, you know, I'm like, come on, brain, let's get stuff together.
Well, you know, I think most of my experience, especially lately, has been using the red meal to connect with the spirits of the land, the spirits of place. Especially in my situation, moving across the country and moving from a place where I had been building relationship with the spirits of my home and of the place I was living in, and then moving to a new place. And you know, I've been trying to make an effort to, you know, build out those kind of relationships with the energies here and the beings here, and honoring them. So, for me, you know, the red meal is a great way to do that, which is probably why I so often am inclined to do it, you know, outside and in a natural setting. So it's been a blessing having that as a tool available, because I think in many ways ritual is especially useful in getting people accustomed to opening up to this kind of communication. And, you know, most people, you know, your average person in this culture isn't necessarily a clairvoyant or a spirit medium. And these kinds of practices are, I think, a way of opening those doors to having those experiences and becoming more open to realizing that two-way communication between the, you know, us and the unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I found fascinating in listening to these episodes, again, is the emphasis that Hyperion placed on politeness, respect, but not just respect for whatever spirit or ancestor you may be interacting with, but also respect for self. I was really impressed with that, revisiting these episodes, that's really what jumped out at me at the second listen around, was the effort that he put into coaching listeners to have healthy relationships with themselves and with whatever spirits they may, you know, be working with, and of course the people in their lives.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that leads really well into episode 26, where Hyperion is talking about building a, sorry, the cat just scratched my toe, trying not to scream, talks about building a spiritual alliance with an ancestor of men who love men. And, sorry, trying to take a breath. Why don't you take over, Matthew, while I'm trying to keep from screaming?
Episode 26 of Hyperion series, The Unnamed Path, talks about building a spiritual alliance with an ancestor of men who loves men. He describes this I think he may have used the word tradition. But the technique is certainly a part of Unnamed Path tradition, wherein the individual establishes a relationship and alliance with a particular spirit from among the ancestors of men who love men. And there's sort of a contract that lasts for a year. Normally you engage in this relationship often for a particular purpose. You're starting grad school and you have a lot of anxiety around it and some concerns, so you're asking for some support and stability in that arena. And this ancestor, you know, hypothetically has agreed to help for a year. And the reason they do this is it's a way for them to improve. Some of them, you know, choose a path of gradually becoming spirit guides, and entering into these kinds of contracts are a way for them to progress on their journey. So it's a two-way street. It's reciprocal. One thing that he talks about is, you know, ask the spirits, you know, do you have any tasks for me? It's a give and take. And my experience, which I did have with this, was not something that I planned to do. It was, I was doing a lot of regular meditations and a lot of regular journeying, and I did build this kind of relationship. It was like a buddy system, but it wasn't something that I sought out. I think I visited the ancestors once, and it was just agreed upon. It was more like he picked me, so to speak. And it turns out his presence was around for about a year. And sometimes I would be aware that someone else was looking out through my eyes, particularly fascinated with highways and roads, as though they were a novelty to him. So it was a really, really interesting and beautiful experience. And it's after having that, it was interesting to go back and listen to this episode 26 and see how Hyperion described it so well.
I'm trying not to go quiet on y'all. You know, we're trying to make sure we're, you know, sticking to our notes because we want to cover as much as we can.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, I'm going through. I'm trying to think if I forgot anything that was important to talk about. Definitely, one thing that Hyperion always emphasized was asking permission. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just showing decent respect, you know, whether you're dealing with someone who, in the visible realm or someone in the invisible realm, you know, treat them with dignity and respect, and always ask. Mm-hmm. Don't assume that just because you're there, that a particular spirit is obligated to work with you or put up with you even. But usually, you know, those of us on our, you know, on this path, it creates a framework that opens you up to the protective beings who are already there around you, and strengthening that relationship. You know, it's, you know, like if you have a trusted advisor, it's one thing if you can hear a faint whisper, but if you can raise the volume a little bit, you'll get a more clear message. And I think that's what a lot of this kind of work actually does. It helps polish that, that window through which we can receive messages from, you know, the other side.
Huh. You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, when blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to speak and the words are not coming up. You mentioned how, you know, when people normally, you know, want, I think you did mention this. I'm trying to remember now. You know, when's a good time to, you know, build a relationship with an ancestor? And that's usually basically whenever you're beginning like a large project in your life, or at the beginning of the year, because, again, year-long contract. I feel like I forgot about the part where if you're starting on a project, you know, asking if an ancestor is willing to help you. And that made me think about, I have a big project that I'm wanting to undertake with some of our brothers, and maybe I need to, well, not maybe, I need to, you know, see if there's an ancestor who's willing to work with me, and the brothers who I'm going to be working with, maybe, well, they need to see if there's an ancestor who's willing to work with them on this project as well. Because
wow, I love that.
The original podcast was a project that, well, no, the original podcast was an assignment from an ancestor, from the ancestor Hyperion was working with. He's like, okay, I want you to do this. And he had the first episode up within a week or two, I think.
That's right. Yeah, and he talks about it in, I think it was this episode, episode 26, where he talks about it. So I guess this is the episode that really, it's the big reveal. It reveals the secret origin of the unnamed path, really. And it's, to me, that's one of the most fascinating aspects of the tradition, and humbling in many ways, is that it's a gift from, you know, the ancestors, and of course a gift from, you know, a lot of Hyperians and you know, amazing and impeccable research and insight and inspiration.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I don't think we mentioned was Hyperion talks about how when you make your agreement, when you make this contract with the ancestor, you need to stick with it. Basically, if you break this contract, this ancestor is not going to be working with you very much longer at all, really. And that was, that goes along with the whole respecting, you know, having respect and for those who are not of this world, who are spirits. Was there a better way to word that? I don't think so.
No, I think you worded it well. Hyperion took these relationships, he took the work very seriously. And I feel benefited from that guidance, because I always strive in what I do to, you know, be respectful. It's not a game. It's not entertainment. That's why it's called work. And I think sometimes it's easy to forget that or to rush through things or to not make the effort to really tune in. To really use the tools that we're given, to really use the capacities that we have. We have these muscles. We can kind of, some of them we can make twitch a little bit, but maybe they need a little bit more exercise. So, you know, these are big exercises. It's a big commitment. And so allying with an ancestor, this particular tradition, I've experienced it once. I did not set out to experience it. It, you know, I visited the ancestors and it just happened, and it was a wonderful, positive experience. But I wouldn't, unless there was a need, if I had a specific need to seek it out, I would. But I'm very cautious about that. It's not something to undertake lightly.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm trying to think where else to go. You know, once you've, and, you know, we've talked about, you know, being respectful, you know, sticking with the contract that you make, it's also up to us, you know, after we've completed the goal, after, you know, the end of the year, or, again, completed the goal, because I feel like most people would make these contracts when they need help completing major projects. So, you know, once you have completed this major project with the help of the ancestor, it's up to us to help them basically ascend and, you know, join the spirit guides in the upper world.
And in that, episode, Hyperion...
No, go ahead, Matt.
He describes... Yeah. Well, he describes seeing that. He talks mm-hmm. about this experience he had with working with his ancestor for a year, and at the end of it, he did... I think it was may have been a red meal, and it was sort of a send-off, and he had this beautiful vision of the spirit ascending to the spirit guides and, you know, the beauty of that and of what he beheld. He really describes it really well, really vividly. And it's, I think it's wonderful that he shared that because it's important for us to remember that, you know, we have goals and we have challenges and we have, blessings that we seek in life. And so too do the spirits and ancestors, people on the other side. They have opportunities for growth and enlightenment and advancement on their journey. They have goals. And in these kind of contracts, we're able to help each other. And, you know, it's... One thing that it's important for us to remember is that that's something that Hyperion stressed very strongly.
I'm trying to think. I can't think of anywhere else to go with this. Do you have any other thoughts, Matthew?
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you if you had had any experiences of contracting with an ancestor of many loves men for a year.
I'm trying to think, and I know I have some ancestors that I work with who are, I wouldn't say that it has definitely been over a year, but they're still working with me on certain things. And I have one who, his goal is basically to help me with my speaking, which I have issues with still. I'm working on it. He, you know, he gives me a little thump here and there. Be like, yep, come on, speak up. So I'm still working with some of them. And we haven't gotten to that point where I am going to help them ascend. What about yourself, Matthew?
Well, I really just had that one experience. I mean, and aside from that, there are ancestors whom I visit. There are ancestors who are part of my spiritual court. So I definitely have those experiences. But as far as this particular tradition that is described in episode 26, I really just had the one experience.
Yeah. I feel like we still have a lot of work that, you know, we're all working on. So
yeah, well, you know, I kind of see, and I don't see any one of these practices as necessarily an obligation. I think it's describes an experience. It describes a kind of relationship and a kind of mode of interacting that that is traditional, that it mirrors experiences of many practitioners from generations past in many different traditions all over the world. Well, before we wrap up, I do want to say a plug for Stone and Stang, and it's the first weekend of October in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and We do hope that any listeners who are moved to do so will go to stoneandstang.com and sign up. And we still have spots available for presentations. So the deadline for submitting for presentations and workshops was extended. So anyone interested in doing that, please, we're really interested in hearing what you have to share. And other than that, that's pretty much I have. Michael, do you have any words before we wrap up?
Let me see. I was actually looking at my calendar to see, make sure I didn't miss anything. I'm actually going to be on, part of the Pagans Tonight Radio Network. We have so much, we are part of the Pagans Tonight Radio Network. There are so many amazing shows and whatnot on this network. I feel like I said network one too many times, and I just said it again. There are so many amazing shows, and I'm trying to think how to say it. The show on Monday nights, Lunatic Mondays, with Laura Gonzalez, she's actually going to be interviewing myself and a couple other people to talk about our entries in the anthology Queer Magic, Power Beyond Boundaries. So,
oh, nice.
So I'm excited about that. It's going to be tomorrow at 8 p.m., kind of like this. It might more than likely be a little bit longer because there's going to be three people talking, and I believe Laura is the only person on Monday night. So, yeah. So that'll be fun. That's tomorrow, 8 p.m. Central Time. If you want to join us, it is Central Time. And I'm trying to think, what else? If you're someone who's going to be at Between the World, would love to meet you. And that's in September. And I'm trying to think, what else? We do have, I need to send him a reminder email. We do have Lee Harrington coming on the show. I was just looking at the date. Oh, come on. My phone decides not to open. We have Lee Harrington coming on the show in August. On August, August 26th, we will have Lee Harrington on to talk about sacred sexuality and kink. So that's
nice.
Going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we're working on trying to get something for our next show coming up. So, follow our Facebook page and we'll post updates and whatnot as soon as we have everything finalized. And yeah, that's it for me. All right,
yeah,
you, Matthew?
I think we're working on having some really exciting guests coming up. So I'm really enthusiastic about what's happening. And stay tuned. We love you. And are we going to, maybe we should sign off with a song?
I was just thinking that, and I was scrolling through, and one popped. I saw one really quick. I was like, oh, no, where'd it go? This one sounds interesting. Have you heard of Celia, Matthew? I've played a few of her songs when we've ended some of the shows.
Yeah, I have. I think I've heard a couple pieces.
So this one just popped up, and I was like, oh, that might be a good one. This one is Celia, The Veil is Thin. How does that sound?
Oh, that sounds great.
All right. So this is going to be Celia, The Veil is Thin. You've been listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. I am Michael Graywolf.
And I'm Matthew Sidney.
And we hope to hear from you soon. Drop us an email at walkingunnamedpath@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. And we will see y'all in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Good night.
Calling all ancestors, Samhain, Samhain. Calling all ancestors, Samhain, Samhain. Calling all ancestors, Samhain.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night,